From the bottom of Chav Beis Amid Beis, three lines from the bottom. Okay, so the Gemara says, Iboya Lehu, Mahu La'ashin. The Gemara wants to know, what's the halacha on Yontif? Is one permitted to smoke certain things? Are you allowed? Again, we'll see in the context of the Gemara what exactly we're discussing here. So the Gemara says, Rav Yirmiyahu bar Abba Amar Rav Asur, Ushmuel Amar Mutter. It's machlokas in the Gemara. Rav Huna Amar Asur, Mipnei Shemechabe. So Rav Huna says that the issue with the smoking something on Yontif is that it's a problem of Mechabe. In other words, you're extinguishing the flames of the coals in the process of smoking an item. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Amar Li Rav Nachman, V'nei Amar Mipnei Shemavir. Isn't there a more obvious problem of Havara, that you're igniting a fire, which is a problem on Yontif as well? So the Gemara says, right, Amar Le, Tchilasu Mechabe V'sofo Mavir, which basically means that it's both. It's both. In other words, when you smoke something on Yontif, it's basically both issues at hand. It's of Kibwe and Havara. Amar Rav Yehuda, Agabe Gachelas Aser, Agabe Cheres Mutter, the Rabba Amar Agabe Cheres Nami Aser, Mishum De Kamolid Recha. So now the Gemara quotes the following Machlokas. According to Rav Yehuda says you're not allowed to smoke anything on Yontif with coals. But what you can do is that you can smoke something on earthenware. Whereas Rabba says that even smoking something on earthenware is a problem. What's the issue according to Rabba? The Gemara says it's a problem of molid recha, which means that you're essentially creating a new smell. So this is not a kibui havara type of a problem. This is a problem only midrabanan of molid recha, of creating a new smell. Then the Gemara says, Rabba v'Rav Yosef d'Amri Travayu, sachufe kaza ashirai biyoma tava asr. One is not permitted to take a cup and turn it over on top of some silk. In other words, you want to have this incense, this, you know, smell wafting around on Yontif. You would not be permitted to do that on Yontif. My taima, mishum de kamolid recha. It's the same issue, because again, you're creating the scent on Yontif, which is a problem of molid. So the Gemara asks, umayshna mi molo meriach bo vikot mo meriach bo. How is this any different? Let's say I take, a stick of cinnamon or some cloves or whatever, and I decide I want to start breaking it apart, rolling it between my fingers. That also causes, you know, scent to waft everywhere, and that's permissible on Yontif. So what's the difference? Why is that not a problem of molid recha? So the Gemara says, no, there's a big difference. Hasam recha mia isa ve'osufe hu dekamosif recha. Hacha olude hu dekamolid recha. The big difference is that in the case of the cinnamon sticks, the cloves, or whatever, the scent is already there. You're just bringing it out by breaking it apart or by rubbing it between your fingers. In contrast, if I take a cup of spices, of incense, and I light a fire and put it, or I take a fire and I put it over some silk or whatever, that's a scent that didn't exist before that I'm creating, and that's a problem of molid. Then the Gemara quotes a third opinion, Rava Amar, Agabe Gachelas Nami Mutter Midi Dahava Abisra Agumri. Rava says, it's even permissible to take your incense, your spices, whatever it is, and put it on top of coals on Yontif. Why would that be permissible? So the Gemara compares that to roasting meat on Yontif. Now, when you roast meat, obviously you can roast meat on Yontif, it's Ochel Nefesh, it's obviously permissible. It's possible that there may be some scent, some smell that comes along with the meat, which is going to be okay. Why is it okay, according to Rava, to basically roast spices and make incense on Yontif? So the way that Rashi explains this is that actually, interestingly, it's actually considered Ochel Nefesh. Now, usually when you think of Ochel Nefesh, you think of food, but the truth is that the Gemara says in Maseches Ksubis that Ochel Nefesh means Davar Hashava L'Ochel Nefesh, something which everybody needs, which everyone uses. This is a whole, you know, discussion about showering on Yontif. Does that fall into the category of Davar Hashava L'Ochel Nefesh? You know, maybe Bazman HaZed is different than in the times of the Gemara. But this question also, the Gemara really in Maseches Ksubis discusses this more at length, which is the question of, is incense considered to be something which is Davar HaShava L'Chol Nefesh? That apparently seems to be part of the Machlokas in the Gemara. So if you think that incense and spices and having things wafting around your house is considered something that everyone does, that everyone uses, then you can make the argument that that's included in the Heter of Ochol Nefesh. And that would explain why Rava says you're allowed to roast the incense even on the coals on Yontif. But if you think, like the other day in the Gemara, that you're not allowed to do that, so presumably you think that incense is not this universal thing that everybody needs. So again, that seems to be the issue at hand here. Fine. Then the Gemara says, Darash Rav Gvia mi beiksila pischa deverish galusa ketura shari. So Rav Gvia said that ketura is permissible on Yontif, but the question was, it was unclear what he was referring to. Amar le ameimar my ketura, I ketura bidei maisa uman. If the word ketura is related to the word kesher, as in tying a knot, so why would that be permissible on Yontif? That's one of the lama test malachos. Kosher, if you tie a knot, that's a problem. So the Gemara says, no, you're right. The Gemara says, v'ila la'ashin asur d'hakam mechab. And if you're going to say that the word ketura refers to smoking something, as we were just talking about in the Gemara previously, so that should also be asur on yanta. That's a problem, as we just noted, of mechab. Maybe it's a problem of havara as well. So what exactly is the Gemara talking about here? So amar le ravashi la'ulam la'ashin midi dava bisra gomre, says the Gemara, no, really it is discussing smoking something on yanta. So why is it permissible? So just as we noted a second ago in the Gemara, it's the equivalent of roasting meat on yantif, which again, according to the way that Rashi just explained this Gemara, it's basically included in the heter of ochel nefesh. That's one version of the Gemara. Then the Gemara says, ika damre, amar le'amemar ma'iktura, iktura bidei ma'isa umanu, ila ashin asur dekamolid recha. In the second version of the Gemara thinks that the issue with smoking something on yantif is not the issue of mechabe, it's not an issue of extinguishing or of lighting the flame, but rather it's the other issue that we were referencing in the Gemara, which is molid recha, that you're creating a smell on yantif. To which the Gemara says, Amar Ravashi, Ana Amrisa Nihaleu Mishmei Degava Rabba Amrisa Nihalei La'olam La'ashi Numidi Dahava Bitzra Gomre. So again, the Gemara comes to the same conclusion in the first version, which is again that it's really talking about smoking something, and it's permissible to smoke something on Yantif, again, because it's similar in that sense to roasting meat, which again basically just means that it's included in the heter of Ochel Nefesh. Okay. Then we,
Rabbi,
yeah.
According to Rashi, are we saying that anything that universally people do, even though it's not food related?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Again, it becomes a little bit tricky to define exactly what that is. But yeah, in theory, if you could come up with something that would meet those criteria that's considered a davar hashava l'chol nefesh, then theoretically that would be included in the heter of l'chol nefesh, which could be a pretty wide ranging, pretty broad spectrum of things. But again, it becomes tricky, halacha l'maisa, to define what exactly is included in those things. But yes, in theory, it would include other things as well. Okay, then we said va'osin gedima kula. So one of the things the Mishnah spoke about was roasting an entire lamb or goat on the night of Pesach. Tanya Reb Yossi Omer Todos Ish Romi Hineges Bnei Romi Lechol Gedima Kulas Pelele Psachim. This is a famous Gemara we actually spoke about back in Maseches Psachim, that Todos, who was like the chief rabbi of Rome, he used to tell all the Jews of Rome to take a whole, again this was obviously after the Churban, to take a whole lamb, a whole goat, and to roast it on the night of Pesach and eat it. So Sholchulis, so they sent a message to Todos, Il Mali Todos Ata Gozranu Alecha Nidui Shata Machilas Bnei Yisrael Kachim Bachutz. So the Chachamim of Bavel sent to Todos, he said, if you weren't this big Talmud Chacham, we would have put you into Cherem. Why? Because you're causing the Jewish people to eat karbanos outside the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara says, what do you mean? The Gemara says, kachim salka daitach, ela'ima ke'ein kachim. It means, in other words, they were basically saying that people are going to get the mistaken impression, it almost looks like you're eating the Karban Pesach outside the confines of the Beis HaMikdash. Again, this is one of the reasons today why on the night of Pesach, we try to avoid roasted meat, and certainly having a whole lamb, a whole goat is also problematic. Okay. And the Mishnah says, shlosh Dvarim Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah matir v'chachamim osur. There were three areas of halacha in which Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah thought it was permissible, and the Chacham thought it was problematic. So, first case, parasu yotza biritzua shabin karna. The first halacha, again, the Gemara is going to flesh all three of these things out, which is that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's cow used to walk outside on Shabbos with a strap between its horns. What's the issue exactly? We actually spoke about this case back in Maseches Shabbos, which is basically that in other words, one's animals are also, so to speak, obligated to keep Shabbos. In other words, it's on your head. They don't keep Shabbos. That's a din of shvisas behema. So part of the discussion here is whether this is considered a masoy. If something is considered a burden for an animal, then it's unnecessary. And if it walks outside in Rishus Harabim with a burden, then you violated the din of shvisas behema. If it's not considered to be a burden, if it's considered to be part of the animal, if it's considered maybe ornamental, a tachshit, whatever it is, so then that would not be a problem of violating Shabbos. That's the first case. Then the second case, umekardines habehema biyantif. Again, the Gemara is going to discuss this also. But basically, what this means is that you can take some kind of a fine tooth comb and use it to brush the animal, maybe to remove lice or to groom it or whatever it is on yantif. And then the third halacha is the shochakenes hapilpalin barichayim shalahen. You're allowed to grind up pepper in the mills that they had back in the days of the Mishnah. Rabbi Huda Omer ein mekardenes habehema biyontov mibnei shaosa chabura aval mekartzefin vachachamim omrim ein mekarden aflo mekartzefin. Then we have a further machlokas, another two opinions. According to Rabbi Huda, he says you're not allowed to use a fine tooth comb when you're brushing or grooming the animal, but you can use a wide tooth comb. And again, the Gemara is going to discuss why this is the case. The Chachamim say that even using a wide tooth comb is problematic. Again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Mishnah says the reason why you can't use the fine tooth comb is because it's going to create some kind of a chabura, it's going to create an injury, it's going to cause the animal to bleed on yantif. But the Chachamim say that even using a wide tooth comb is also problematic. So fine. So now the Gemara goes back to the original halacha in the Mishnah. Mishnah, which was about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's cow going out with the strap between its horns on Shabbat. So the Gemara asks, "Lememra de Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah chada parahavyolei." The Mishnah sounds like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah only had one cow because it said paraso shel Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in the singular. His cow used to walk outside on Shabbos with the strap between its horns. The problem is, the Hamarav Amri Lomar of Yehuda Marav Tlesar Alfe Egle Hava Maaser Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah me Edrei Kol Shata v'Shanta. The Gemara tells us again, also from Masechta Shabbos, that every year Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah used to separate 13,000 calves as Meiser from his flock, which means that he had 10 times that amount. He had 130,000 animals. So why is the Mishnah talking about one random cow that he had? So the Gemara says, Tana, lo shalo haisa, ela shal shechina, so haisa, umitoch shalo micha ba nikrei sal shema. Also a very famous Gemara, which we also spoke a lot about back in Masechta Shabbos, which is that that cow was not actually his. It belonged to his neighbor, but the reason why the Mishnah refers to it as his cow is because he was held accountable for not giving musr to his neighbor, who was basically violating the din of shvisas behim on Shabbos. Again, the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos had a whole discussion about this related to tochach, related to all these different types of halachos. Okay, then we said umakardines habehema biyantif. The Mishnah also said that one is permitted, again, at least according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, to even use a fine tooth comb when grooming the animal on yantif. So the Gemara says Tana Rabbanan ezahu kirud veezahu kirtzif. What's the difference between these two terminologies in the Mishnah of makardin and makartzifin? So kirud ktanim veosin chabura, kartzif gedolim veein osin chabura. So the kirud is basically a fine tooth comb that's going to injure the animal. It's going to cause the animal to bleed. And again, makartzifin is the wide tooth comb, or the wooden comb as opposed to the metal one, that is not going to cause the animal to bleed. The gimel machlokas b'davar, and as we noted in the Mishnah, there's a three-way machlokas in regards to these halachos. Rabbi Yehuda savar davar she'enu miskavin aser mihu kirud ketanim ve'osin chabura kartzif gedolim ve'ein osin chabura ve'lo gazrinan kartzif atu kirud. So again, according to Rabbi Yehuda was the one who was the middle ground opinion. He was the one who said you're allowed to use the wide tooth wooden comb, but not the fine-tooth metal comb on Yontif. So what's the difference? So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to the Shita, and this is Rabbi Yehuda's general opinion that we spoke, many times about back in Masechta Shabbos, which is that a davar she'eino miskavin is usher. That's what Rabbi Yehuda passes. We happen to not pass on that. We pass like Rabbi Shimon that it's mutter, but Rabbi Yehuda holds that a davar she'eino miskavin, when you do something on Shabbos or Yontif, and the result is not intended. Again, the classic example of Masechta Shabbos is dragging the bench, if it's not a heavy bench, if it's not a psik risha. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the result happens even though it wasn't your intention, that's a problem. Now, the question is, then why are we distinguishing between a fine tooth and a wide tooth comb? So a fine tooth comb is certainly going to cause the animal to bleed. So that's certainly problematic. That's according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's a davar she'eino miskavin and it's usher. Now, one could have argued, well, maybe we should impose a gzeira not to use a wide tooth comb because maybe you'll end up using the fine tooth comb. So Rabbi Yehuda apparently did not subscribe to such a gzeira. That's why he allows you to use the wide tooth wooden comb to groom the animal on yantif, but not the fine tooth metal comb. That's all according to Rabbi Yehuda. V'rabbanan savri nami k'Rabbi Yehuda davar she'eino miskavin usher. The Gazrinan Kartzif Atukiru, the Rabbanan, take it even a step further. They also believe, like Rabbi Yehuda, that a davar she'eino miskavin is aser, but they believe that we should, in fact, impose a gzera to not use the wide tooth comb because it may lead you to using the fine tooth comb. And then finally, the third shita for Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Savar l'Kareb Shimon, davar she'eino miskavin muter, vinkirvin kirtzif sharei. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah just completely disagrees with everything. He holds a Kareb Shimon. He holds that a davar she'eino miskavin is muter, which means that I'm even allowed to use the fine tooth comb. Then the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel. We pass on the Kareb Shimon that a davar she'eino miskavin is mutter on Shabbos and Yantif. Shaharei Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah modelo, because as we just noted in the Gemara, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah subscribed to his shita. So the Gemara asks the obvious question: Amar le Rava the Rav Nachman, v'leima mar halacha Kareb Yehuda shaharei chachamim modelo. Okay, why are we deciding our psak that we follow Rabbi Shimon because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said that he was right? The chachamim said that Rabbi Yehuda is right. Usually we follow the rabbim over the yachid generally when it comes to psak halacha. So the Gemara says, no, Amar Lei, Ana Kareb Shimon Sirlei, V'o Chari Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Modelo. Basically, the Gemara is just saying that, everyone already knew that we followed Rabbi Shimon. Again, as we noted already, that's in fact how we pass in Lahalacha. And the Gemara was just kind of adding an additional layer of support by quoting the story with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah to kind of buttress, to kind of support that notion. Okay, so now the Mishnah says, Hare Chayim Shal Pilpilin Temeya Mishum Shlosha Kelim, Mishum Klei Kibul, Mishum Klei Mateches, Mishum Klei Kvara. The Mishnah now is breaking down the way that a pepper mill, or really just a mill in general, operated. And the Mishnah notes that there are basically three different components of a mill, each of which are makabel tuma. The Gemara is going to explain this in a second, so let's just go to the Gemara, and the Gemara will clarify. Tana, tachtona mishum klei kibul, emtsayis mishum klei kvara, elyona mishum klei matacha. So again, the Gemara just explains that basically there are three layers to a mill. So the bottom part, where all the pepper actually lands, that's called the clay kibble. That's the, where everything is. That's where everything is received. That's the receptacle. So that's makabel tumah because that has a base kibble. Even if that, by the way, even if that were to be made of wood, that would still be makabel tumah anyway, because we know that when it comes to wooden kelim, if it has a base kibble, if it has a receptacle, then it's makabel tumah. If it's only what's called pshute kliyate, if it's a flat wooden slab, let's say, then it's not makabel tumah. In contrast, but here anyway, we're talking about metal. Metal is makabel tumah regardless of whether it's a slab, whether it has a receptacle. Then the middle part of the mill is where the pepper actually gets grinded up. So that's also makabel tumah. That's called a kli kfara. That's basically the sifter or the sieve. And then the top part is where the pepper actually gets poured into initially. That's also made of metal. So all three components of the mill are going to be makabel tumah. Okay, then the Mishnah says, agala shel katan tmeya medrus vinitelas b'shabes, ve'ena negreres ela algabi kelim. Rabbi Yehuda omer kol ha'kelim ena grarin chutz min ha'agala mipnei shehi koveshes. So the Mishnah tells us two halachos regarding the wagon of a child. So the Mishnah tells us, first of all, that a wagon of a child is subject to tumas medrus. Tumas medrus, again, it's something we've spoken about many times in the past. Literally, the word medrus means to tread upon something. And we know that if a person becomes a zav, a zava, a nida, etc., so if they sit upon a chair, or if they lie on a bed, or they, again, all these different scenarios, so then the chair, the bed, all become tameg, and with tumas mishkav, tumas moshav, tumas merkav, even if you ride, let's say, on a horse, on the saddle, all, again, there are many different variations of this form of tumas. Let's say you have, you have a 7, 8, 9-year-old kid sitting in his wagon, and it turns out, again, the way that Rashi explains the case is that the kid ends up becoming a zav. He has some kind of an emission. So the Mishnah says that that wagon is now going to be makabel to it. It's going to become tameh. And the other halacha about the wagon says the Mishnah is that the wagon is allowed to be carried on Shabbos. Why? Again, assuming that there's an eruv, and again, we're not talking about an rishus harabim, but stam. Why would I have thought that the wagon couldn't be carried? So one could have argued maybe the wagon is not really a kli. Maybe it's muktzah. So no, the Mishnah says the wagon qualifies as a kli, and therefore it's not muktzah. However, the Mishnah adds a third halacha, at least according to the Tanakhama, that you're only allowed to drag this wagon on Shabbos on a smooth surface, on top of kelim, not on the ground, because according to the Tanakhama, the assumption is that the wagon is going to create a ditch in the ground. So the same issue with dragging the heavy bench on Shabbos on the ground, the Tanakhama says you would not be allowed to drag the wagon on dirt. However, Rabbi Yehuda distinguishes. Rabbi Yehuda says that generally speaking, you're not really allowed to drag most utensils over the dirt because it may create a ditch, but a wagon is the one exception, because he says that a wagon doesn't really create a ditch, but rather it simply just presses on the ground as it's moving. It doesn't really create a hole. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, it actually would be okay to drag the wagon across the ground. Fine. So then the Gemara says, "Agala shel katan tmeya medrus to hasamech ilaveis." Why is this wagon of the kid mekabel tumah if the kid is a zav? Because the kid's leaning on it. And again, as we noted, when a zav, zava, nida, sits, lies, leans on anything, on a chair, a couch, a bed, etc., all those things become tameh. Then he tells me b'Shabbos mishum di'ika toras kliyaleh. And again, it can be carried on Shabbos. It can be used on Shabbos, because it's a kli, it's not mukta. And then finally, the ena negreres ella agave kelim, agave kelim in, agave kargalo. Again, at least according to the Tanakhama, you would only be allowed to drag this wagon on a smooth surface, on a paved surface, let's say, not on dirt, my time up, deka avid charit, because presumably you're going to be creating a ditch, as we just noted in the Mishnah. But the problem is, mani Rabbi Yehuda hi d'amar davar she'in miskavein aser, di Rav Shimon ha'amar davar she'in miskavein mutter. So again, the Gemara just notes that statement in the Mishnah must conform with Rabbi Yehuda, because as we've noted already 100 times, Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says that a davar she'eino misgavin is also. Rabbi Shimon, if this Mishnah were reflecting Rabbi Shimon, then it would obviously be mutter to drag the wagon across the dirt floor. Again, how do we know? Let the sign Rabbi Shimon omer gorer adam mita kise besafsal uvavachlo yisgavin lasos charetz. As we know back from Masechet Shabbos, Rabbi Shimon tells us one is allowed to drag these benches and things like that on the dirt floor on the ground as long as you don't intend to make a hole. The problem though with this with saying that our Mishnah has to follow Rabbi Yehuda and that's why I can't drag the wagon on the ground is the latter part of the Mishnah, which is Ema Seifa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ein Hakol Negrarim B'Shabes Chutz Min Ha'Agalim Mipnei Shehi Koveshes Mipnei Shehi Koveshes In Avach Haritz Lo Avda. Right, again, if you looked at the second part of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda said you are allowed to drag a wagon on the ground because all it does is that it presses on the ground. It doesn't really create a ditch. But if the first half of the Mishnah is following Rabbi Yehuda, that the reason why I can't drag a wagon on the ground is because the Dover She'eno Miskavin is Usher, that would seem to be in basically contradict the latter half of the Mishnah. So what's going on? So the Gemara says, no, tree tenai valibid Rabbi Yehuda. As the Gemara says many, many, many times, there were two versions of what Rabbi Yehuda said. So the Mishnah is basically just reporting two different versions. So in the first half of the Mishnah, the first version is that Rabbi Yehuda says that you're not allowed to drag a wagon on the dirt floor. In the second version of the Mishnah, in the latter half, he says, no, that it's mutter because all it does is press on the ground. Hadron Allah, Yom Tov. Bill, you have a question before we start the next break?
No, actually, I wanted to tell Sydney. Sydney, oh. We could do so tomorrow at the 6 a.m. meeting, and we would got to drag someone in from Spartak today. So
I'll try to be there.
Okay. Okay. So let's just finish up. We'll wrap up with the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says in the new parak here, "Ain sudden dugim and habivarim biyontov, the ain nosnim lifneihem mizonos, avot sudden chaya veofmen habivarim venosnim lifneihem mizonos." The Mishnah makes the following distinction: a person is not allowed to, you know, what we call fishing. In other words, you can't trap fish from a pond, from an enclave on yontif, and you're not allowed to feed the fish either. But you're allowed to trap wild animals and birds and things like that from an enclave, from an enclosure, and you're also allowed to feed them. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, lo kol habivarim shavin. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, not all enclosures are the same, so how do you know? What's the difference? Zeh klal kol ha-mechusar tzeda aser v'she'enu mechusar tzeda muter. Again, the Gemara goes into a lot of detail about this, but basically, the Mishnah says it depends if the animal is considered to be trapped already. So the assumption is that fish are not really trapped. In other words, they can get away. So when I go fishing on Yontif, I'm trapping a fish that wasn't previously trapped. But if I have, let's say, an animal, a wild animal or a bird that's in an enclosure that can't get out anyway, let's say it's an enclosed area and the birds can't escape or the wild animals can't escape, so then by me trapping them, I'm not really trapping them because they're already trapped to begin with. So that's not considered to be the malacha of tzad.